As soon as a woman approaches, they resort to aggression. This is the method many Japanese men have been using to deal with feminism. Feminism in Japan has evolved from heated online discussions to physical confrontations in the real world. Faced with extreme feminism, which has turned into misandry, Japanese men have decided to evolve as well, and they've created what they call the samurai duel. In short, many Japanese feminists began accusing men of sexual harassment unfairly, without any evidence. The male response was clear. Whenever a woman approaches suddenly, the man prepares for a confrontation. They resort to aggression because, if accused of harassment, they could face up to 3 years in prison. But if it's just a fight, the sentence is only 15 days. 3 years versus 15 days, Japanese men know well which is the better choice. But how did Japanese feminism reach this point? And how are men reacting? Hello everyone, welcome to All Asian Dilemmas. And today we're going to analyze how feminism in Japan has evolved into physical clashes between men and women. Recently, on a Japanese subway, a girl was so tired that she accidentally bumped into the man sitting next to her. His reaction? He grabbed his phone and hit her hard on the head with it. The girl woke up startled from the pain. A video of this moment went viral, and many people criticized the man. It was just a light touch, why be so petty? Even if he didn't want to be touched, that doesn't justify hitting her. Others went further, questioning his masculinity. What kind of man attacks a woman over something so trivial? Social media exploded with debates, with hashtags like #violentsubway trending for days. But beyond the criticism, many Japanese men understood his actions. For them, the issue is simple. They don't want to risk ruining their lives. After all, in recent years, thousands of harassment cases have been reported in Japan, but more than half were proven false. Many radical feminists make accusations just because a man looked at them or tried to strike up a conversation. There are stories of men accused simply for offering help to a lost woman on the street or for accidentally brushing against someone on a crowded train. Common situations in a country where public transport is cramped and inevitably chaotic. And in Japanese courts, a woman's word is often enough. Even without any evidence, if a woman insists she was harassed, her chances of winning the case are high. And what happens to the man falsely accused? He could face 3 years in prison, pay fines that drain all his savings, and after being released, lose his job and even his family. In a society where reputation is everything, being labeled a harasser is a social death sentence. Japanese companies, known for their strictness, rarely keep employees with criminal records, even if the accusation was questionable. That's why the man on the subway didn't want to take any chances. He couldn't push her with his hand or say anything. Any gesture could be interpreted as aggression or harassment. So he used his phone to push her away, an object that, in theory, wouldn't leave serious marks. Because no one wants to risk their life over a simple touch. This case wasn't isolated. In Tokyo, a man was filmed pushing a woman with his backpack after she approached to ask something. In Osaka, another threw a water bottle at a young woman who bumped into him. These incidents, though shocking, reflect the growing fear among Japanese men. Moreover, some radical feminists in Japan have started using false accusations to extort money from men. Before, men were always at a disadvantage. They had to prove their innocence after being accused, something nearly impossible in a system that favors the alleged victim's word. But now, many have decided to act preemptively. If a feminist approaches to falsely accuse them, they strike first. And they do so while avoiding vital areas so that even if the police are called, the case is treated as a common fight, and security cameras, ubiquitous in Japan, always show that the woman approached first. Lawyers report that in such cases, judges tend to be more lenient, imposing light fines or short detentions, while harassment charges lead to harsh punishments. In this new war, women end up at a disadvantage. Despite some radical feminists persisting with their tactics, they face unexpected physical resistance. And ironically, it's ordinary women, those uninvolved with extremism, who suffer the most consequences, whether from accidental bumps or misunderstandings. But how did Japanese feminism, once one of the strongest in Asia, fall into this decline? At its peak, Japanese feminists no longer wanted equality. They wanted privileges. And that's how women-only train cars came to be. The measure, implemented in the early 2000s, was a response to high rates of harassment on crowded trains, known as chikan. At the time, it seemed like a victory. a safe space for women in an environment where they felt vulnerable. But over time, the privilege became a symbol of division. Recently, a woman complained on social media that she bought a first-class ticket and found the other three passengers were men. She then demanded women-only cars for this type of train too. The railway company refused, arguing that first class was already a controlled environment with no harassment records there. Some criticized her, calling her spoiled. If you want that much privilege, pay for a private train. But what few people know is that in Japan, many women hate women-only cars. When there aren't enough seats, women in regular cars ask, "Why aren't you in the women's car?" And even inside the women-only car, conflicts arise. Some women attack others' appearances. "You're so ugly you wouldn't even be at risk of harassment in the regular car." Others complain about perfume smells or loud conversations. There are even reports of physical fights in these spaces, like a case in Kyoto where two passengers slapped each other over a seat. That's why many Japanese women oppose these privileges. They know that, in the end, these benefits can backfire, creating more segregation than protection. Before the 1960s, Japanese women had a much lower status, treated as their husband's property. Marriage was a social contract, and divorce was almost unthinkable. They had no voice, neither in the family nor in society. But with the economic boom, they gained access to education and began fighting for equal rights, influenced by Western feminism, especially from the United States, where the civil rights movement was in full swing. Back then, women wanted real equality, like the right not to be discriminated against in the job market and to earn the same wages as men. This allowed many of them to achieve financial independence. Then came the economic bubble of the 1980s and early 1990s. Japan grew rapidly, and with that, salaries soared. With more money, consumption skyrocketed. And as the biggest consumers, women began gaining privileges. They not only had their own incomes, but also had men spending money on them, whether on dates or gifts. Whoever controls the economy controls the rules. It was at this moment that Japanese feminism stopped seeking equality and started demanding advantages. Romantic relationships began to be measured by money. If a man wanted to go out with a woman, he had to pay for dinners and give expensive gifts, jewelry, designer bags, trips. And even then, he often ended up as just a plan B. There was even a term for it, ATM boyfriend, a man used as a cash machine. Back then, it was common for women to date multiple men at once, keeping a main one and others as backups. This created a gender imbalance. Less wealthy men or those unwilling to spend were excluded from the dating market, while richer ones found themselves exploited. Even in the workplace, feminism reached extremes. If a boss sent too many emails to a female employee, he could be accused of harassment. If a colleague offered coffee and insisted after a refusal, he risked the same. In a Tokyo company, a manager was fired after complimenting a subordinate's hairstyle. She claimed it made her feel objectified. If a man tried to talk to a woman on the street and persisted after the first no, he could also be accused. In some cases, women weaponized this. They'd reject a man publicly, and if he reacted poorly, shout harassment to humiliate him. But this era of female privileges was sustained by women's purchasing power. When the economic bubble burst in 1991, everything collapsed. Consumption dropped, and companies started laying off employees. Even without gender discrimination, the market began valuing only the most productive, and women, who often worked fewer hours than men due to domestic responsibilities, lost ground. A University of Tokyo study showed that between 1992 and 2000, the female unemployment rate rose 15%, more than the male rate. The men who stayed were workaholics, with no time or money to pay for dinners and gifts. Many started living for work, sleeping in capsules, or even at the office. Suddenly, many Japanese women began dreaming of being housewives again. They no longer wanted privileges, they just wanted a husband with a stable job to take care of the home. Surveys from the time showed that in 1995, 60% of women aged 25 to 35 said being a housewife was the ideal, a jump from the 30% of the previous decade. But a small group of radical feminists continued down this extreme path, promoting gender conflict. They organized protests, like the famous Silent March in 2010, where women walked through Tokyo streets with signs calling all men potential predators. They published online articles labeling marriage modern slavery and encouraged harassment reports even without evidence. And the men reacted. Now, these feminists face an aggressive response. On forums like 2channel, Japanese men share tactics to protect themselves from false accusations, like recording all public interactions with women or avoiding eye contact on trains. Others go further, embracing the samurai duel as a form of preemptive self-defense. In an anonymous interview, a 32-year-old man said, "If I know she's going to lie about me, I'd rather the lie be about a fight than harassment. At least that way, I'm out in a week." The problem is that, in the end, it's regular women who suffer the most, those who just want to live their lives normally. A 19-year-old student in Nagoya said she avoids crowded trains because she fears being targeted by a misunderstanding. "If I bump into someone, he might hit me, and I can't defend myself." Another woman, a 40-year-old office worker, said she stopped using women-only cars because the other women judge me like I'm weak for being there. Feminism should fight for equal rights, not create divisions. When it began, the movement brought real progress. Voting rights in 1946, anti-discrimination laws in the workplace in 1985, and even the spread of daycare for working mothers. But extremism derailed this path. Today, men and women in Japan are trapped in a battle no one asked for, while society as a whole loses. Men and women helping each other. That's what really makes a society grow. Imagine a Japan where train cars were mixed but safe for everyone, where laws punished real harassers but protected the innocent, where men and women could talk without fear. That should be the goal.
That's it for today's video. Don't forget to subscribe to the channel, leave a like, and comment what you think of this situation. Is there a solution to this gender war in Japan? See you next time.